We're holding on Kufgalad Omudbeis, the second line from the bottom. We started discussing the question. Now, in our Mishnah, we had a machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, whether we know, obviously, that the chalitza, the actual taking off of the shoe, is ma'akev, and if that wasn't done, then you don't have a valid chalitza. They both agree, on the other hand, that the kriya is not ma'akev, so if she didn't say, if he didn't say, loy chafatzi lakachto, or she didn't say, kocha yo'asa la'ish, or whatever, then the chalitza is still good, as long as they're able to speak. We said if they're not able to speak, then that's something else. But there was machlokas as far as the spitting. Is that ma'akev or not? Rabbi Eliezer said yes, Rabbi Akiva said no. So we said that they sent a message, good morning, Avraham Moshe, they sent a message to Avud Shmuel, saying that if the Yavama spit in front of Bastin in front of the Yavam, then that passes her from Chalitza, and then they still have to, she has to do a proper Yibum. But in other words, the point is that now she has to do a proper Chalitza, I mean, but Yibum is now closed off as an option. So we're discussing which Tana would that be according to, and we said that according to Rabbi Akiva, in fact, since he says that the spitting is not ma'akiv, then according to him, on the face of it, it shouldn't passel either. So even if she spat, then that shouldn't prevent her afterwards from doing yibum, as long as no actual chalitza was done. We said only according to Rebbe would it come out that if she spit, then that's enough to passel her for yibum, and of course chalitza still has to be done to be matter her. So this is where we're picking up now, two lines from the bottom of Kof Dalet Amud Beis. So the Gemara asks, so me, Omer, Rabbi Akiva, Rakika, Le Pasla. So are you telling me then, which we said before in the discussion, that Rabbi Akiva would say that the Rakika, that the spitting does not passel her from Yibum? In other words, that even if she did the spitting, as long as no chalitza was done, where Rabbi Akiva is saying that the chalitza is the only thing that's essential to the procedure, then until the actual chalitza is done, she would actually still be able to change her mind, or he'd be able to change his mind, and they could do Yibum. V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, cholza v'loy rachaka v'loy kora, if she did chalitza but did not spit and did not say the psukim, chalitza sekshera, then the chalitza is still kosher, but rachaka v'loy cholza v'loy kora, on the other hand, if she spit but didn't do the chalitza and didn't say the psukim, then the chalitza is posel. Now, chalitza is posel implies, as it usually does, that it still has validity to the extent that it prevents yibum to him or to any of the other brothers. It just means that a kosher or chalitza still needs to be done. And the braisa continues, kara v'loy rachaka v'loy cholza, if she only said the psukim and didn't spit and didn't do the chalitza, in kan beis mechush, then there's nothing to worry about, then they would even be able to do the yibum. Now, the braisa doesn't say who it's from, but mani, we have to figure out, of the tanoim that we know so far, which one is it? Elamer of Eliezer, would we say it's a coin of Eliezer? What do you mean? How could you say cholza v'loy rachaka v'loy kara, chalitza sekshera? How could if it was a coin of Eliezer, how could the braisa be saying that if she did the chalitza, but not the spitting or the saying the psukim, the chalitza would be kosher? V'ha'am Rabbi Eliezer, kocha ye'osa, davashu ma'isim akim. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer had said that the words kocha means like this, so it has to be exactly like this, meaning that the procedure has to be done exactly, and ye'osa means anything that involves a ma'isa is ma'akiv, which includes the spitting. The point of the machlokes between him and Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah was that Rabbi Akiva said, since it says kocha ye'osa la'ish, so it means only actions that involve the goof of the yavam. So therefore, it only includes the actual chalitza, which involves the goof of the yavam, taking the shoe off him, but it doesn't include the spitting, which just happens in his presence. But the point is that Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah clearly says that the spitting is ma'akev. So obviously, this braisa that says that chalitza without spitting is still kosher, but the Eved would not be according to Rabbi Eliezer. Elam ela pshita Rabbi Akiva. So evidently, this braisa is according to Rabbi Akiva. V'katoni rokakov lecholtzav lekora chalitza sepsula. Now, the braisa continues that if she spit but did not do chalitza and did not say the psukim, then the chalitza is possible. So, when we say posel, leman, it's posel as far as who? What does that prevent her from doing now? Ilema la alma doesn't mean that prevents her, she still can't marry anybody else outside the family. Pshita, of course, mi havi chalitza de ishtalya la alma. After all, there was no chalitza. We know that for her to be mutter, to marry anybody outside the family, there has to be actual chalitza, there has to be an actual removal of the shoe, and we're saying there wasn't. el olav la'achin. So evidently, when we say that chalitzos of psula, it must mean possible in the sense that it passes her to the other brothers, to him and all the other brothers. So therefore, shmamina, so that shows that even according to Rabbi Akiva, so not like we said before, we argued before at the end of the previous Amud, that according to Rabbi Akiva, we would say that given that he, on the face of it, given that in the Mishnah he said that even when you're doing the actual mitzvah of chalitza, he said that rikika is not ma'akiv, because he said chalitza by itself is enough, just taking off the shoe. How much more so we said that, we drew an analogy with cases of korbanos, where, for example, you have the emurim of the korban has to be offered on the mizbeach, but if they're gone, then you don't have to. In the same way, we would say that Rabbi Akiva, on the face of it, would say that the spitting doesn't do anything at all. Now we're saying that no, based on the braisa we just quoted, in fact, Rabbi Akiva would say that the spitting has an effect of pasteling her for Yibum, and therefore, when they sent the message to Avodah Shmuel saying Yivama Shiracha Katachlis, we don't have to say that's only according to Rebbe. We could, in fact, say that it is according to Rabbi Akiva as well. Well, then the question becomes, Rabbi Akiva, Maishna Rikiko, Maishna Kriya. Well, then, why is it, according to Rabbi Akiva, that the Rikika is enough to passel her, and why is it that the Kriya doesn't? After all, according to him, the only one of the three things that's active is the taking off the shoe. So why is he distinguishing and saying one of them makes it a kosher, a chalitza, and without it, you don't have a chalitza, namely the taking off the shoe. One of them was saying the rikika doesn't make it a kosher chalitza, but it's enough to make it a posel chalitza that passels her for yibum in the future. And one, the kriya doesn't do anything at all. What's the difference? Why does he distinguish between rikika and kriya? And the answer is kriya de isa ben mitzchila ben basayf. Because the kriya, you have two different ones. There's something that she says before the yibum, and there's something before the chalitza, and there's something that she says after it. Because you have, before she actually takes off the shoe, she says the words, Mayan Yavami Lahokin Lahokim Shem Yisrael Loy Over Yami. And after she takes off the shoe and spits, she says, Kocha Yerosa. So therefore, so the Kriya, the Issa, Bein Betchila Bein Vesayf, given that there are things that she says both at the beginning and at the end of the procedure, loy michla falei, nobody will get confused by it. In other words, what could you have? You could have a case where afterwards she does yibum. Now, you don't want people to think that mistakenly that after chalitza you're still allowed to do yibum. People are going to realize that if she only says psukim, people are going to figure, okay, she said only the psukim beforehand. She said mei and yavami, and all of a sudden the yavam spoke up and said, what are you talking about, mei and yavami? You know what, I would like to do yavam. So therefore, nobody's going to think that there was actual chalitza, and then they went ahead and did yavam, which, as we've learned previously in the Masechta, would be an isur lav. On the other hand, Rikika, the Betchila Lesel, or Seif Issa, on the other hand, the spitting is done only once. After she takes off the shoe, then she's supposed to spit. So now, Michla Falei, so now there's the possibility of confusion. If she only spits, and people only saw the spitting, they're going to think, well, she must have previously done the chalitza, we just missed that part. And now, afterwards, if we were to say that after the spitting, she's allowed to do yibum, then, but also the mishri, chalutza la'achen, people are going to think that after chalitza, she's still allowed to marry one of the brothers, when in fact she's not. So that would be, even though it's true that the kikah, according to Rabbi Akiva, is not ma'akiv, nevertheless we'd have reason, midrabanan, to say that it would pass off for yibum in order to avoid such a confusion. So the Gemara tells in this connection, all of that is one version of what they sent to Avodah Shmuel and the discussion that resulted from it. The Ikadamri, another version, is Hochi Shochulei. They sent Avodah Shmuel the following message, where, as we said yesterday, Avodah Shmuel was a distinguished Rav in Bavel, so therefore, when they're sending him a message from Eretz Yisrael with practical halachas that he should be aware of as the Av Beis Din in the area. Anyway, so according to the second version, what they sent him, the message was, Yevoma Shedrocha Kotachloitz, that if she spit, if she spat, then she does need to do chalitza, like in the first lashon. But the point was that the eina tzricha loruch pa'am acheres. She does not have to spit again. So, in other words, even though the order is supposed to be first mei and yavami, then taking off the shoe, then the spitting, then kocha ya'asa l'ish. But if she did the spitting out of order, then she doesn't need to do it again. That was the point of what said. They're telling him two dinim, according to the second version. Number one, that the spitting makes it that now the only possibility is chalitza. There's no possibility of yibum anymore. And number two, that she doesn't have to spit again. As the Gemara says, ki ayhi da'asya l'kameh d'rab ami, as we have the example, good morning, Ali, we have the example of a Yavama who came to Rab Ami, have a Yosef Rab Abba Mamamo kameh, and Rab Abba Mamamo was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rab Ami, and she, by mistake, spit before she did the chalitza, before she took off the actual shoe. Amalei Rab Ami, so Rab Ami says to his Talmud, Rab Abba Mamemel, chalitzla, arrange for her the chalitza, v'shari la tigra, and dismiss her case. In other words, literally, shari la tigra literally means undo her argument, but it means, in other words, finish up the case and let her go. So in other words, the point is, he's telling Rav Abba Mamemel, you only need to, at this point, arrange that she actually takes off the shoe from the Yavam, and once that's done, she doesn't need to spit again, and she's free to go. Omelet of Abba, Vabarin and Merak, and Rav Abba says, what do you mean? Doesn't she have to spit in the proper place of the procedure? Doesn't she have to spit Bechlal? So Rav Abba says, Harakakala. So she already spat, she doesn't need to again. So Rav Abba says, "Potato kumabakach." So what? What's the problem? Let her spit again. The fact that you're telling me chaloitzla v'shori latigra implies that you want lachatchila that I should only arrange for the chalitza that she takes off the shoe and nothing more. Now, why is that? Why aren't you telling me lachatchila? At least we should have her be spitting again. And the answer is, Rav Ami answers him, "Nafik minei chorba." Because if you make her spit again, then that could create problems. That could create misunderstandings. Namely, if you tell her that now she has to spit again in the proper place in the procedure, Amri, then people who see that are going to think, that the original spitting has no consequence, and it didn't pass over from Yivum, and then we're back to the problem that we said before. But also the Mishri Chalutz Lachin, now what's going to happen in the future? You're going to have a case where the spitting was done. People are going to think that the chalitza was already done because they know that the order is supposed to be chalitza, then spitting, and then the mishra chalutza la'achen. And then the result is people are going to mistakenly think that when they see afterwards that if she only spit and now she's doing yibum, then people are going to think you are in fact allowed to do yibum after chalitza, which is not the case. Therefore, we want to make the spitting that's why we said before, we want to make the spitting consequential enough to passel her for yibum. And for that reason, Rav Ami is telling Rav Abba Bar Memel, for the same reason then, we want people to realize that the original spitting had that consequence, therefore we're not going to make her do it again. So that way people don't think that the first one does not have any consequences. Okay, so Rav Abba Bar Memel says, V'habarin kesidron, don't we need everything done in the proper order? I mean, on the face of it, the Torah is giving us an order to do things. It means you have to do it in that order. So Rav Ami tells him, no problem. Kesidron lay ma'akva, doing things in the proper order that it says in the psukim is not ma'akiv. So in this case, it's true the spitting was supposed to be done after taking off the shoe. But in this case, she did it before, then fine, because Medid Abbanon, as we said, we don't want people to have this misunderstanding about chalitza followed by yibum. Therefore, we're going to say that kisidron is not ma'akiv. So the Gemara says, who suffered the choye kamad chilei? Now, Rab Abba Bar Memel figured that Rab Ami must be just pushing him off. He's probably just giving him an excuse that kisidron my ma'akva, don't worry about it. But does he actually have a basis for it? He didn't think he did. But nafak dok va'ashkach. But so nafak, Rab Abba Bar Memel went out of the Beis Medrash, dok, he checked into it, va'ashkach, and sure enough, he found a braisa. The Tanya, where Braisa says, Bein shehiktim chalitza l'rekika, Bein shehiktim rekika l'chalitza, whichever one you did first, whether you did the chalitza first or the spitting first, masha asa asri, what's done is done, and it is a valid chalitza. So therefore, yes, that substantiates what Rav Ami is saying, that yes, the proper thing would have been if she hadn't spit first, if instead we had done things in proper order, but once she did the spitting out of order, and we're saying we want that the spitting already should have consequences so that people don't mistakenly think that the spitting was done in its proper place after chalitza and is still allowed to do yibum, because of that, we're going to say that if she spit at any point in the procedure, then she doesn't have to do it, then we shouldn't have her do it again, and that way it will be clear to everybody this Zera Dirabanan about what happens after the spitting. Okay. More about the spitting and more about the procedure in general. The Gemara says, Levi Nafak Lekuyasa. Levi, the Talmud of Levi was one of the prominent Talmudim of Rebbe. He one time, in particular, I think that Amnon says later on, he was one of the Rebbeim of Shmuel. But anyway, so he was, so Nafak Lekuyasa, one time he went out to the villages. So often in the Gemara, when it says that somebody went out to the villages, it can mean, for example, that he had property over there, for example, and he's going to check on it. The Yerushalmi actually tells the story over here in a little more detail, which we'll tell in a minute. So Bomine, while he was there in the villages, they asked him a number of questions. Number one, Gidemes Mahushatachloitz. Can a woman whose hands have been amputated, can she still do chalitza, given that she doesn't have hands to undo the laces and take off the shoe with? Number two, Yevama Shirokka Dammahu. What happens if the Yevama spits blood? So she spits and blood comes out instead of saliva. And the third question they asked him is, a Pasuk in Daniel, so a Malach is telling Daniel about the four kingdoms, about the four empires that are going to rule over the Jewish people, one after the other, till Mashiach comes, and he says, Avol agid l'cho es ha-roshem b'chsov emes. He says, however, I will tell you what's written down in the true writing. So what does that mean? The cloud, the ikak sabsha ina emes? Does that imply that Lamaila, that in Shemayim there's some kind of writing which is not true? So Loi Habibiyade, he didn't know the answer to any of these questions. Also Shol Ben Medrasha, so he went and asked in the Beis Medrash. So before we continue with what the answers were, so the Yerushalmi tells the story as follows. It says there was a town in Eretz Yisrael called Simonia, a town in the Galil. They one time asked Rebbe, they said, we need you to send somebody who will be our one-stop shop for everything that we need in Yiddishkeit. He should be our chazan and our rav and our melamed and so on and so forth. Now the Yerushalmi doesn't say why they ask like that. Why don't they just have one of different people for different jobs? You have that famous series of books, Koyasu Chachameinu, it was translated into English as our sages showed the way. They have the story over there. The writer over there, Yecheved Segal, suggested that maybe Pashas they were poor and they were saying we can't afford to support so many klei kodesh. Anyway, Akitzur, so Rebbe sends them Levi. This Talmud of his, Levi. Levi comes over there, and of course, they're showing him great honor. Our new Rav and Chazan and so forth is coming, so they built for him a big platform in the city square, and they're sitting him on it, and they ask him they ask him the first question, and he doesn't know the answer. So they ask him the second question, he still doesn't know the answer. They think to themselves, okay, so maybe he's not so expert in halacha. Maybe he's an expert in Agadda. So they ask him the third question, which is a question in Agadda, and he still doesn't know the answer. Very disappointed. They send a message to Rebbe. What kind of person did you send us? And Rebbe was very shocked. He says, I sent you a person who's fully of the same caliber as me. Tell Levi to come back to you and let me discuss this with him. Find out what's going on. So Levi comes back and Rebbe asks him, the questions. Now, our Gemara says over here that he went and asked in the Beis Medrash and they told him the version in the Yerushalmi is that he himself knew each of the answers. So Rebbe says, okay, well, then why don't you tell these guys in Simonia? And Levi says, you know what happened, Rebbe? When they put me on that platform, I felt very proud. I felt very good about myself. And that caused me to forget my learning. So the story ends there. So we don't know what happened. But Pashtus, I guess Rebbe sent him back there and then maybe told the people not to give him such covered and not to give him such public covered in order not to make him proud. But whatever the case, the point is, it's the same story. But that's the reason why the Yerushalmi says why he forgot these details. Tosfos Yeshanim refers to that Yerushalmi. So what were the answers? Omrulay, so they answered him. On the first question, you're asking, what about a woman whose hands have been amputated, whether she can do chalitza? Sure. Niksiv b'chol tzibiyad. The pasuk doesn't say anything about that she has to do chalitza with her hand. So now we learned previously, Tosfos refers over here to something we learned the other day, that you're supposed to do it with the right hand. That's only the mitzvah ba'alma. Ideally, she should do it with her right hand. But if she doesn't have a right hand, or she doesn't have any hands at all, then in fact, she could do it any way that she could, even with her teeth. In fact, there's an interesting discussion among Achronim in a similar vein when it comes to taking the Dalad Minim on Sukkos. Given that also the pasuk doesn't say the yad either, it says lakachtam lachem bayimurishin. So would it be valid if a person's hands have been amputated? Could he take the Dalad Minim with his teeth? There's some discussion about it among Achronim. Anyway, that's the first answer. Yes, she could do chalitza. If necessary, she'll bend down and undo the straps and then remove the shoe with her teeth. Thank you. The second question, like I was saying yesterday, we find that Yoav tricked Avner into doing that, and then while Avner was bent down to show him how to do it, then Yoav took out a sword and killed him. So that's the first one. The second one, miksib yorkal roik. Similarly, as far as the second question, it doesn't say she has to spit saliva, it just says she has to spit. So whatever comes out of her mouth, even if it's blood, is fine for that purpose. The third question, Aval Og Agid Lachal Roshim Ksavemas. The third question, the Malach is telling Daniel that I will tell you what's written in the true writing. Does that imply the Fiyash Ksav Sheina Emes? Is there a writing in Shemayim that's not true? The answer is like Kasha, Kanvig Zaudin Shiyash Imashur, Kanvig Zaudin Shein Imashur. It depends whether the Gzaudin has a Shvua attached to it or not. If it doesn't have a shvua, then in a certain sense, it's not emes. It hasn't been sealed. We know chosamah shalachadosh baruch hu emes. It hasn't been sealed, so to speak, with Hashem's seal, with Hashem's stamp. Therefore, in that sense, it's not emes, meaning that it can still be overturned. But if there's a shvua, with it, then it cannot be overturned, and therefore that can be called ksav emes. So now, when the Malach is telling Gabriel that I will inform you what's written the ksav emes, it means that Hashem has sworn that these things are actually going to happen. The Yerushalmi says it slightly differently. The distinction is not whether Yeshima Shavua or Enima Shavua, but whether the Gzaudin has been sealed or not. So the Gemara says, Kedir Shmuel Ba'ami. Now this fits with what Rav Shmuel Ba'ami says. The Amr of Shmuel Ba'ami, Amr of Yenison, Minayim L'Gzaudin Sheyeshima Shavua She'enim Eskarveya. How do we know that a Gzaudin of Hashem that's accompanied by a Shavua will not be ripped up? Shenemar. The pasuk, this is in Sefer Shmuel, you have Shmuel's first nevuah, which is about the family of Eli, what's going to happen to them as a result of the averus that Eli's sons Hophni and Pinchas have been doing. So he says, "Lachem nishbaiti lebeis Eli." Therefore, I've sworn about the family of Eli. He miskaper avoyin beis Eli b'zevach of mincha ad olam. That the sins of beis Eli will never be atoned with korbanos or with menachos forever. So we see that since Hashem says l'chein nishbati, then it means it's permanent and irrevocable. So now the Gemara adds another point. Now Rashi makes a point of saying that the Girsa is supposed to be Omar Rabba or Rabba rather than V'Omar. V'Omar would mean that we don't understand what the previous one means until we have the next line. But in fact, that's not so. What it is once the Gemara has established, that's it. We've established that a Gzaudin, Sheyeshima Shavua, cannot be canceled. Now, incidentally, the Gemara is mentioning another point. Since the Pasuk makes a point of mentioning that the Aveda will not be atoned, the Zevach or Mincha, that does imply there is a different way of being Mechaperit. So the Gzaudin, Sheyeshima Shavua, lasts forever. And forever, if they do Zevach or Mincha, it's not going to help them. But there are other things the Pasuk is implying, which if they do, will help them. And the Gemara tells, therefore, we have this in Rosh Hashanah as well, Omer Rabba, b'zevach of mincha ein meskaper. It means it won't be atoned with zevach of mincha, al meskaper hu b'divrei Torah. But it can be atoned with divrei Torah, meaning that if the descendants of Eli learn Torah the way they're supposed to, then their lives will be lengthened, and they won't die young as the Zerah is. Abaya Omar, b'zevach of mincha ein meskaper, al meskaper b'gnulis chasadim. Good morning, Yaakov. Abaya says that it means it's not going to be atoned with zevach or mincha, but it means that it will be miskaper with gmilas chasadim. So Abaya may mean gmilas chasadim by themselves, or he may mean gmilas chasadim together with Torah. Now, why would that be? Marsha explains like this: we know al shloshet barim ha'olam oimer, al ha'torah, al ha'avodah, al gmilas chasadim. Now, what happened with Bnei Eid? What happened, one of the Averis that they were doing was that they were treating, the couple of the Averis that they did involved treating the Kodshim with contempt. The Psukim describe over there how when people would bring the Korbanos, they would grab whatever portions they wanted, they wouldn't even wait until the Chalev was offered on the Mizbeach before they started taking. When the Gemara explains in Shabbos, when women would come to bring bird korbanos, they wouldn't be in a hurry to bring them, and therefore the women would have to stay over by the Mishkan extra time. So they were treating the korbanos in a disrespectful way. So therefore, in kategor nasa sanedur. So therefore, the same korbanos, the same avodah that they disobeyed Hashem with, can't now be used to help them. Therefore, so Rabbah is saying that you need only one of the other amudim, Torah by itself, and Abaya is saying that you need two of them, Torah and Gmilas Chasadim.
Abaya lived shorter because Rabbah was doing.
One second. So Rabbah and Abaya midveis Eli ka'asu. Now Rabbah and Abaya both descended from the family of Eli. In fact, they were uncle and nephew. Rabbah occupied himself with Torah during that time. Therefore, he lived to 40 years. Abaya, the Osik, the Torah of Mos Hasadim, Choya Shittin Shnin. Abaya was occupied with Torah and with Mos Hasadim, and he lived to be 60 years old. Now, Tosfos points out, it's not that Rabbah was not Osik in Gmilas Hasadim. He certainly was, but he wasn't Osik so much with it. Unlike Abaya, who was Osif with it much more, and therefore that gained him 20 extra years. Now, Tosfos also discusses here in Rosh Hashanah whether the correct Girsa is Rava or Rabba. Now, Tosfos says, evidently it has to be Rabba, because Rava was not a Kohen. So, and the family of Eli were Kohen him, so anybody who's descended from them, it has to be a Kohen. So therefore, Tosfos says it has to be over here Rabba. On the other hand, there are Gersois Rava, and there are different explanations. Rashi over here, for example, Rashi doesn't say actually about this. He says about the previous thing that what Rava says, the Zevach Mincha and Meskater. But there are Rishonim who have the Gersa Rava, and they explain, for example, now there's a Gemara in Chulin that bears on this, where it says that Rava tells his Shamash, who was a Kohen, to take the Zroi L'chayayim Mekeva, implying that Rava himself was not a Kohen. However, on the other hand, in Chulin over there, I think Rashi even talks about over there, the possibility that maybe Rava himself was not a Kohen, but maybe his mother was from Beis Avi. So therefore, that could still justify the Girsa over here, Rava. Rava outlived Abaya, but not necessarily were they the same age. Now, there is a Gemara. Now, it's true. Rav Shuda Goyen tells us in his Igeres that Rava lived, after Abaya passed away, Rava lived another 14 years. But we don't have to say that they were the same age. Now, there is a Gemara in Brachas where you have a story where Abaya and Rava were both young children at the same time, and Rava asks them, when we make a Bracha, whom are we addressing? And they say Rahmana, they say Hashem. And where is Hashem? And one of them points to the ceiling, and the other one goes out and points to the sky, and Rava is very impressed with them, but so if that is Rava, regular Rava and Shas, then yeah, it would mean that he and Abaya are about the same age. Then it would necessarily have to be that the Girsa over here would be Rava, because then yeah, then Rava would have outlived Abaya by law. On the other hand, there were Girsois over there that wasn't Rava, but rather Rava by Rav Chon, who was a different Amora. So in that case, Rava conceivably could have been a lot younger than Abaya. It's interesting, actually, that Rav Levi Yitzchak, Rebbe's father, has an explanation of the Kabbalah about that Gemara in Brachas, and also about our Gemara over here, where he says it is in fact Rava, the famous Rava, and Abaya, and that literally one of them lived to be 40 and the other one lived to be 60. And he explains up the Kabbalah that it also relates to that story in Brachas, where 40 and 60, Shlosmem and Samach, represent two different kinds of makifim, makif akarev and makif arocha, because we call them in terminology of Hasidus. And one of them, and then he says, Rava was associated more with makif akarev, and Abaya more with makif arocha, or maybe it's the other way around, I don't remember. And therefore, in keeping with that, one of them pointed to the ceiling, which is the makif akarev, and the other one pointed to the sky, which is the makif arocha. So according to that, it would mean it is Rava over here, in fact. With all of that said, by the way, another point to consider then it would be Abaya lived 60 and Rava lived 40. That's what we're saying. However,
Rava lived outlived Abaya.
No, because that's then you would have to say that then you would have to say that the so Rav Leibik doesn't deal with the chronology over there. So he doesn't deal with the fact that Rav Shuda Goyen makes says that Rava outlived Abaya by many years. But maybe he would say that it is in fact Rava Bar Rav Hanan over there. But since he and Rava share the same first name, then it means they have a certain kesher between them. Anyway, with all that, by the way, it's worth pointing out the Derus Rishonim of series on Jewish history deals with this Gemara extensively, and he says on various grounds, even if you say that it's Rabbah in all Gemara over here, it's very difficult to say, based on various other Gemaras, that Rabbah in fact lived to only 40 years old. So he in fact changes the Girsa and says that what the Gemara is saying is both of them lived to 60. So he says in the words like this, on the surface what the Gemara is saying over here is that Abaya's point is correct, that you need Torah Gmilas Hasadim, and only then will you live longer, and if you have only Torah, then you're going to live shorter. But he says, maybe not. Maybe the Gemara is saying that Adrabah, Rabbah's position is correct. Torah by itself, you don't even need Gmilas Hasadim, just Torah by itself is enough to cancel the Gzeira, and then the person lives to a decent age of 60. And he explains various other Gemaras on that, along those lines as well.
It's not so clear,
yeah. Okay, anyway, going on. Tanu Rabbanan. Further on this topic of base A, the Zera on them, Mishpacha Achas Hoisav Yerushalayim, Shoyim Mason Kibban Shmona Esrei Shana. There was a family in Yerushalayim where the men in that family would die at about 18 years old. Bovo Dios Rabbi Yechanan Zakai. So they came and informed Rabbi Yechanan Zakai to ask him, what can we do about that? Omalem, he says, Shema Mishpachas Eli Atem. Is it possible that you're from the family of Eli? Now this is almost 1,000 years after the times of Eli. But the family was still in existence. One of the nevuos that was said to Eli on this topic was that all the men of your house are going to die as anoshim, as young men. So Maharsha explains, that's why they died at 18. Before that age, they're not even of the age of marriage yet, they can't really be called anoshim. This is the first age when they can be called anoshim. So he tells them, go occupy yourselves with Torah, and you will live longer. So half of Oskar was Torah v'chayu. Sure enough, they went and occupied themselves with Torah, and they lived longer. V'chayu koyer noisim mishpachas Yochanan al shmoi. And from then on, they called themselves, people called them the family of Yochanan after Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, who saved their lives. Okay, continuing on this topic of a gemara. Now going back to the point about a gzar din that has a shavua or doesn't have a shavua. So Amar of Shmuel ba'unya Amar Rab, minayin le gzaudin shal tzibur she'enin nechtam. How do we know that Hashem's gzaudin, that Hashem's verdict about the tzibur never gets sealed? In other words, implying that it can always be overturned. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, ainin nechtam? What do you mean it doesn't get sealed? Well, ksiv, you have a pasuk that implies that it does. Yumiya is speaking to the Jewish people collectively. It's in the second haftarah of the 3 weeks. Kiyim techabsi ba'neser. He says to them, even if you scrub yourself with neser, which is a type of earth that they used in those days for laundry, v'sari loch bodis, and even if you use a lot of bodis, which is a plant that has soap in it, nichtam avonich lefanai, your avodas have been stained in front of me, implying, in other words, that Hashem is saying there's already a gzar din, and it's already been stamped because of your avodas. So Ella, no, you're right. What Rav Shmuel ba'unya means is minayin shativim nechtam miskareya. How do we know that even though for the tzibur, even though the gzau din has already been sealed and stamped, it can still be ripped up if the people do tshuva? How do we know? Shenem mikashem alakenu b'chol kareinu elav. As the pasuk says, who is like Hashem, our God, at any time we call to Him. So any time implies even after the gzau din and even after it's been signed and sealed, nevertheless, it can still, the people can do tshuva and it can be ripped up. We talked about before, by the way, on Daf Tzadik Ches. We said that, well, first of all, you had something like that in Nineveh, but we learned over there also, as far as Yonah, that you had something similar where there was a gzau din on the Aseres HaShivatim because of their Averis. But then, at some point, they did a degree of tshuva, and Hashem, on the contrary, took away the gzau din against them, where they'd been badly beaten by Aram, and on the contrary, they defeated Aram and became a superpower. So the Gemara says, "Vaksiv Dirshu Hashem v'Yimatzoi." On the other hand, don't you have a pasuk that says, "Seek Hashem when He is found," implying that there's only a certain time when Hashem can be found, and after that, not so much. And the answer is, "Vakasha Habi Yochid Habi Tzibur." There's a difference between the Yochid and the Tzibur. The Tzibur's Gzau Din can always be ripped up, as opposed to, because it's always an ace rotzim for the tzibur, but the yachid, yeah, there's only certain times. Once it's been there, once it's been sealed, like for base eli, then we're saying that it can't be, that it can't be overturned. So the Gemara says, yachid emas. Okay, so for yachid, what is that time of the matzai? When's that time when Hashem is easily found and you can do tshuva and overturn the gzardin? That's during the Aseret Yemei Teshuva. Then Hashem is close, even to the Yochid, and therefore even the Yochid's Gzera can be ripped up at that time, but the Tzibur is a different matter. We actually had earlier in the Masechta, also involved, we had earlier in the Masechta, the story involving Menashe and Yeshaya, where Menashe, King Menashe, the Rosha, claimed that the various things that Yeshaya had said in his Nevoos contradicted the Torah, and one of them was this, where he says, it says in the Torah about Hashem alakenu b'chokareinu elav, you're saying, Yushu Hashem b'imotze, so you must be a false Navi, and the Gemara says, no, that's talking about, one's talking about the Yochid, and one is talking about the Tzibur. Marsha points out the words b'chol kareinu elav. The whole pasuk is written in the plural. Mi kashem alekenu b'chol kareinu elav. As opposed to dushu Hashem miyimatze, it starts out b'loshen yachid dushu, that you plural should seek out Hashem. But then it continues b'loshen yachid. But then it continues. The next pasuk continues b'loshen yachid yazed rosha darke v'ish oven machshavosav. That is why the Gemara tells us that pasuk is talking only about the yachid. Next, going back now to Dinim of Yibum, the Gemara says, Shochu Leila Avur D'Shmuel, they sent another message to Avur D'Shmuel, Yivama Sherocha Kadam Tachlitz. We said before that one of the questions they asked Levi was if the Yivama spits blood, is it kosher? Now, not really kosher, by the way, I forgot to mention before. Rashi says, we're not really talking about whether it's kosher or not. We established before that Bechlal was spitting is not Ma'akav, according to Rabbi Akiva, and the Halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. What we mean is it chalitza malyasa? Is it a good chalitza, or should we be telling her, you know what, try to spit again and see if you can get some spit out? So now they sent a message to Avur D'Shmuel, Yivama Sherok Gadam Tachlitz. If she spit blood, then she needs to do chalitza. In other words, again, that spitting passes her. Tosfos explains that you have two different messages. First, they sent him the first one that we said before on Kuf Dalet Amud Beis, and then a second version of it on R onward, where they sent him the chlal that if she spits, then she's possible for Yibum in the future. Now, they sent him a follow-up message that's true, not only if she spits saliva, but even if she spat blood. Because the blood inevitably is going to have little droplets of saliva. And therefore, saliva came out. So the Gemara says, "Maisi." I have a contradiction to that. On the other hand, we learn in a brisa, "Yochol yehi dam hayotzim mipivum mipia amatame." When you have a zog or other tmeim who have the same level of tumah as a zog, a nida, and the rest of them. So now we know that we know that their saliva is an avatoma. We know that also, for example, blood that comes out of his organ is also metame. And also his shichvas zera, also his urine. So all of them are an avatoma. So yochol yehi dam. So sorry, actually, blood from his ama is not. But you would think that yochol yehi dam yotzim mipivu mipia amatame. You would think that blood that comes from his mouth should be like his saliva and should be metame, or that blood that comes out of his ama, out of his male organ, should be metame, just like his urine or his shechvasera. No, tamalema zoive tome. Therefore, the pasuk says his zoive is tome. The ain't bein dama yotzim people via ama tome ala toher. The blood that comes out of his mouth or from his organ is not tome; it's toher. The Gemara in Nida, by the way, discusses the details. It has to be, if it's called misagil v'yotze, in order for it to be matame, as an avatruma, it has to be something which collects in a large amount and then comes out, as opposed to these things which sort of just dribble out. Anyway, the point is, so we see that blood from the mouth, we don't say that there's saliva in it. If there was saliva in it, we would say it is an avatruma, just like regular saliva from a zav, and we're saying that no. So how can we say over here that EF sure that the blood from her mouth shouldn't have bits of saliva in it? And the answer is like Kasha, kanbametsetzes, kanbeshoises. There's a difference whether the blood is dribbling out, whether she sucks the blood that's in between her teeth or from wherever it is that's coming from her mouth, and then she spits. The sucking inevitably will mix some saliva with it. So then that's what we're saying, that it would be kosher for chalitza, as opposed to if it's just dribbling out by itself, then we're saying, you're right, that's not considered spitting, and therefore she hasn't done the spitting, and preferably we should have her do it again. Again, if she didn't, then the chalitza is still kosher, because halacha is not going to give her, but nevertheless, the chalitza, we should have her do a proper spitting. So now, if she sucks the blood from between her teeth, or wherever it is, and then she spits, then we'll have saliva mixed in, and then it's fine, even the chalitza. Okay, the Mishnah had said, so now we said in the Mishnah, we said that if a cheresh does chalitza, then we said, and we said a couple of other cases, one of them being chalitzas lakotten, one was that if the yavama was a gdola, and she did chalitza, and the yavam was a cotton, then we said chalitzas a psula, then it's a posula chalitza, again, meaning that it passes her for yibum, but they still have to do a proper chalitza. So Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Zu Divrei Rav Meir. That would only be according to Rav Meir. We learned in a previous perek that Rav Meir, in the 10th perek on Daf Tzadik Vav, we learned that Rav Meir held that the chalitza of a boy 9 years old or above is the equivalent of a get by an older yavam, and in fact, so it doesn't take the place of chalitza, but it passes the yavama for you. But the Chachamim say the chalitza of a cotton is nothing whatsoever, and therefore, according to the Chachamim, it wouldn't even passel him for yibum. So if they did chalitza when he was a cotton, they could still change their mind before he becomes a gadol and do yibum. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Ketana shecholtza v'chola, we said that if a Ketana does chalitza, so we said she should do chalitza again when she gets older. If she didn't, then we said chalitza sepsula, then the chalitza is possible. Again, that passes over Yibum. And we discussed before, the Tosfos on this is printed over here, that Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi that says that actually if she didn't, then chalitza sepsula. So again, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Zud Divrei Rav Meir, this is all according to Rav Meir, that Rav Meir has said that a Ketana cannot do Yibum, the Amar Ish Kosev Parsha, Rav Meir says like this, the Pasuk clearly says the word Ish, it says, V'im lo yachvitza Ish. So therefore that excludes a cotton, which is why we said before, that the chalitza of a cotton certainly can't be kosher. According to the mayor, the chachamim gave it the force of a get by a gadol, and according to the chachamim, they didn't even do that. So therefore, you definitely need the yavam to be an ish. Umakshin an ish al ish. And so says Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rav, that Rabbi Meir would also say that we make a hekesh between the isha and the ish. Even though it doesn't say the word isha in the pasuk, nevertheless, you still have the pasuk says the imlo yachvitz ish va'osi yivim. So if a man doesn't want to do yivim, then the yavama goes up to the dayanim, implying therefore that Rabbi would say there's a hekish between the yavam and the yavama if he has to be a gadol and so does she. So therefore, on Mishnah that says that she should do chalitza again, and if not, then it's then and if not, then it's possible would be according to Rabbi. According to what Tosfos is saying, that we would say that the hekesh is only drabana. Abel Chachamim Omim Ish Ksiva Parsha. On the other hand, the Chachamim disagree with the mayor, and they say no. It does say the word Ish in the parsha, sure. So therefore, the Yavam has to be a gadol. But Isha ben Dola ben Ktana, but it never says anything about Isha. They don't hold of the hekesh that Rav Meir is learning from. Therefore, they say the Yibum would be kosher whether she's a gadol or not. Even if she's a Tana, it would still be kosher. So again, if we follow the Girsa in our Mishnah, then it would mean Rav Meir would be saying it's a Chalitza Psula, and Rav Yossi would be saying that it's Kshera. And according to the Girsa that Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, it would mean that Rav Meir would say that it's possible with Rabbanon, but B'diavad, if you didn't do Yibum again, if you didn't do Chalitza again, I mean, then it would be kosher. And Rav Yossi would say that even Lachatchila, she could do it as a So the Gemara says, Man Chachamim Rabbi Yosef. When we say Chachamim over here, who do we mean? We mean specifically this is Rabbi Yosef's opinion. And how do we know that? It starts like this. Did Rav Chia and Rav Shimon ben Rebbe have a Yasu? One time Rav Chia and Rav Shimon ben Rebbe were sitting together. One of them started the discussion, one of them started the conversation by saying, When a person is davening, Shimon Esrei, he has to be looking downward. Why downward? So Rashi says he has to be looking towards Eretz Yisrael. The Pashtus, in other words, we're talking about the person is standing in Eretz Yisrael and davening. And the Shechina is there in Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar b'hoyu einai v'libi sham kol hayomim. The pasuk says, Hashem says that my eyes and my heart will always be there in the Beis Hamikdash all the time. So therefore, we should be looking downward. Other Rishonim learn a little bit differently. Rashi over here is saying that he has to look towards Eretz Yisrael. Other Rishonim learn that it means specifically he should be imagining, this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, he should be imagining himself as though he's standing in the Beis Hamikdash, and if he's standing in the Beis Hamikdash, he's looking downward at the floor of the Beis Hamikdash. So therefore, a person should be davening in that posture. The Chad Omer, the other one, on the other hand, says, no, Ein of Lamaila, his eyes should be upward. As the pasuk says, we should lift up our hearts to kapoyim, where one of the meanings of kapayim means the clouds. So we should be looking upward. As goes to Bach brings a different girsa, which is that the other one says that you have to mechav in your heart upward. So you have to look downward, but you have kavana upward. Adahafi, as they were discussing this, also Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yosi v'Gabayu, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yosi came to join them, and this is the son of the Rabbi Yosi who we were saying before. Sam Rabbi Yosi in the Mishnah and in the Gemara is Rabbi Yosi ben Chalakta, and now his son Rabbi Shmuel. So Amar Lahu Maya Skitu. So he asks Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Shimon Berebi, what are you involved with right now? What are you discussing in Torah? Amar Lahu Tefillah. So they told him, we're discussing dinim of Tefillah. He says to them, Kach Omar Abba, this is what my father said, Rabbi Yosi had said, that you need both. In fact, you need both. Your eyes should be focused downward, but your heart, your thoughts should be focused upward. So that way, both of these psukim are being niskanim. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, it brings from Sefer Chassidim that he says that if a person looks upward and is davening, then like the malachim makes fun of him. Like, what kind of a posture is that for davening? So you need to be facing downward, except the Alter Rebbe adds in Shulchan Aruch, if a person feels at some point during Shemini Esrei there's kavana, that he's losing his kavana, then he should look upward in order to refocus his kavana on Hashem, but then look back downward. In Chassidus, by the way, in a number of places, it talks about the idea, yeah, that everybody brings it in the Kodesh Torah, and it's brought in different places after that, that the meaning of Ein of Lamata, the Libra Lamaila, also means that you have to be focused on Yechuda Ilah and Yechuda Tata. And in various places in Chassidus, it explains what it means. It means that you have to, your avoda of tefillah shouldn't just remain lamaila, it shouldn't just remain someplace up there in the cloud, but rather you have to work on bringing it down, the poil into your avoda down here on earth. So in that sense, ein of lamata, your eyes are focused down here. What is my tefillah going to be accomplishing as far as my avoda? As far as my avodas habirurim, as far as being mivarim myself and the world around me, and libo b'mayla, and then your heart and your thoughts are focused above. How am I going to bring a lakus down here into the world? Continues the story. Now, so far we don't yet have anything about Rabbi Yosi saying that a ketana can do chalitza. That we have the continuation of the story. Adahochi also Rebbe Lamasivta. While they were having this conversation, Rebbe came to the yeshiva to give his drasha. So everyone has to go sit in their place. Inu Dahu Kalili. Now Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Shimon ben Rebbe were quick on their feet. Yeshiva b'dechtayu, so they right away went and sat in their places. Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi agav yukre. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi was very heavy set. Rashi refers to. You have the Gemara in Bav Metzia that talks about a few of the Chachamim who were very heavy set, and Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosef was one of them. So because of that, he couldn't walk quickly, have him a chaseya ba'ozel. So he's walking slowly to his place. Meanwhile, everybody else is already quickly getting into their seats for Rebbe's Durasha. Omele Avdon, so one of the Talmidim over there named Avdon, says to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosef, Tosfos says that actually the Yerushalmi names him Abba Yudah. So Avdon, as he's called in Al Gemara over here, is a short form of the name Abba Yordan. Anyway, so Avdon or Abba Yordan says to Rabbi Yosi, says to Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yosi, like in a tone of contempt, Mi huzeshem faseya al roshay am kodesh. Who is this who's stepping over the heads of the holy people? Meaning you're not supposed to be doing that. You should have been in your place before everybody else sits down, so you don't have to step over them. Remember, in those days, the Talmidim usually sat on the ground. So literally, you have to be walking over their heads in order to get to your place. So what do you think you're doing? Amalei, so he answers, Ani Yishmael b'Rav Yossi, Shabasi Luma Tomei b'Rebbe. Well, I'm Yishmael b'Rav Yossi, I'm coming to learn Torah from Rebbe, and therefore I have to go sit in my place. Amalei, so Avram says to him, V'chi'ata hogun luma Torah m'Rebbe, do you think that you're an erlich person, that you deserve to be learning Torah from Rebbe? Amalei, so, now what kind of a question is that? I mean, what's going on over here? So there's a number of different explanations. Marsha explains, that Avdon is saying like this. We know that Rebbe was famously honored. Now, to step over people's heads shows a lack of anivus. It shows like I'm greater than them, and therefore I can inconvenience them in order to step and sit in my place. So when Reb Shmuel b'Rav Yosef, when he's asking, what are you doing? Why are you stepping over the heads of the Rosh Am Kodesh? So he says, because I'm coming to learn Torah from Rebbe, meaning I have no choice. I have to go to my place. So Avdon says to him, you're acting like a Baal Gaiva. In that case, what are you doing learning Torah from Rebbe, who is famously so honored? So you don't deserve to be a Talmud of Rebbe, he's saying. Omalei, so Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi answers, v'chi Moshe hoya hogun lumen Torah mipi Agora. So, do you think that Moshe was hogun to be learning Torah from Hashem? Moshe is a Nivra, after all. He's nowhere near the level of Hashem, and yet he came to learn Torah from Hashem. So the same way, I want to learn from Rebbe. Now, what does that mean? Marashah says, he's saying like this, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu also, to a certain extent, acted, even though Moshe was honored Mikol Adam Asher Al Pnei Adama, nevertheless, we see that there were times when it was necessary for him to act in a way that seemed to show a lack of respect for the people. We see, for example, in Parshas Yisro, where Moshe is sitting and judging the people, and everybody else is standing. Ah, you're going to say it's not respectful to make everybody else stand while you sit, but that's how you have to do it. So therefore, and in fact, also he said, it's very, another point is, we find that Moshe was also stepping over everybody's heads, namely, by Matan Torah. Kof Aleim Ha'ati Gigas, Hashem took Har Sinai and suspended it over everybody's heads. Meanwhile, Moshe is up on Har Sinai. So he's literally over everybody's heads. So what do you want? The same way as we don't hold it against Moshe, and he still went and learned Torah from Hashem, the same way I can be stepping over because it's necessary, because I couldn't get to my seat before that. Amalei, so Avdon tells him, "B'chi Moshe Ata." So what do you think? You're on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. Amalei, so Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi answers that, "B'chi Rabbeinu Lekimhu." So do you think your Rebbe, that Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who we're all learning from, do you think that he is Hashem? So he's not on the level of Hashem. Fine, I'm not on the level of Moshe, but he's not on the level of Hashem either. Amar Rabbi Yosef, Shakli Rebbe Lemetai to say, with that statement that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi called Rebbe Rabcha, he calls him your Rebbe. He's saying to Avdon, he's your Rebbe, implying not mine. With that, Rebbe got what he deserved. Namely, before, Rebbe overheard this whole conversation. When Avdon says, Mihushem Faseya Roshe Am Kodesh, and Bechi Hogun Atabum Torah, then Rebbe should have stuck up on behalf of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosef. And he didn't. So now he got, now Rabbi Yosef, telling the story over 100 years later, says that Rebbe got what he deserved for that, that now, to call him Rabcha V'loi Rabbi. That now, Rabbi Shmuel b'Rav Yossi calls him Rabcha. He says he's your Rebbe, implying not mine. So with that, Rebbe was paid back min hashamayim for not standing up for Rabbi Shmuel b'Rav Yossi's cover. Anyway, so now the story continues. Adahochi oth asya yevama l'kamei de Rebbe. As all of this was going on, a yevama came to Rebbe to arrange for chalitza. Omalei Rebbe la'avdan. So Rebbe turns to the same Avdan who was just in the conversation over here, and he tells him, puk bodga, go out and check whether she has shtei tzniyos. Now, obviously, Avdon himself is not going to be checking, though that would be a gross breach of tzniyos. The Rambam explains, based on Gemara and Nida, what you do is you have women check her, and then they report their findings to the Rav. So in this case, Avdon would have to arrange for his wife or some other women or whatever to physically examine this girl, and then they would come and report to Avdon what's the story. So he went out to do that. Levosid and Nafak asked her, Avdon had left. Omalei Rabbi Shmuel, then Rabbi Shmuel says to Rebbe, actually, you don't need that. Kach omar Abba, ish kosev parasha. This is what my father, Rabbi Yossi, said, that in the parasha it says ish, and therefore the yava must be an adult. Avot isha ben gela ben kana. But a woman, it doesn't say anything about isha in the pasuk, and we don't hold the hekish that Rabbi Meir said before. Therefore, she can be a gela or a kana. This is where we see, when we said before, man chacham Rabbi Yossi, this part of the story shows that it's Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is saying that my father said that. Amalei, so Rebbe turns to Avdon and he says, Tuh, come back, come back to your place. Loit Srichas, you don't have to go check this girl out, or have women check her out. Kvar Hora Zakin, the old Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Shmuel Ben Rabbi Yossi, has already given the Hora. He's already said that it's good enough that even if she's a Ketana, then we don't need to worry about it. So, Kamasa Avdan Va'asi. So now, Avdan is stepping back over everybody's heads to go back to his place. You know what? Somebody who was needed by the Am Kodesh, and he meant, for example, himself, where Rebbe needed his statement that he said in the name of his father. So Yifsal Rosh Am Kodesh, it's appropriate that he can be stepping over the heads of the holy people. In other words, he's saying about himself, I, who evidently the Tzibur needs me, because we see that Rebbe himself needed the statement that I told him in the name of my father, which otherwise he didn't know. So I have a heter to be walking over people's heads. But somebody, in other words, implying you, who the Am Kodesh doesn't need them, Heyach Yifsal Rosh Am Kodesh. How can you step over the heads of the Am Kodesh? Now, Tosfos points out, even the fact is, even when they're allowed to, they're not necessarily supposed to, but Tosfos distinguishes, first of all, if they didn't go out with Soda. In this case, he's arguing to Avdon, it turns out you didn't go out with Soda Am Kodesh, because Rebbe is telling you you didn't have to go out after all. And also, Tosfos says, even if he went out with Soda, he should still try to get back to his place in the shortest possible way. Some of the Mephoshim, by the way, point out when he says earlier in the conversation, when he says, I'm Rabbi Shmuel, but I'm Yishmuel Bereb Yos, why does he have to mention his father's name? Because Tosfos refers over here to a Gemara in Horius that says that the sons of Talmid HaChamim, when necessary, can be Mafsiyah Roshay Am Kodesh. So therefore, Rabbi Shmuel mentions his father as if to say, fine, maybe on my own I wouldn't deserve that kind of thing, but because my father was Rabbi Yosi, therefore I do. But as opposed to you, Avdon, what do you think you're doing? So Rebbe says to Avdon, you know what? Rabbi Shmuel Ben Rabbi Yossi is right. Stay in your place. Don't step over people's heads to come back to your place. So the Gemara says that Avdon was the fact that Avdon showed disrespect for Rabbi Shmuel Ben Rabbi Yossi, he was severely punished for that. But Tana, we learn in a Braisa. But Oysa Shah Nitzara Avdon, at that moment, Avdon got Saras, which Rashi says was his punishment for Lashon Hara. The Tovu Shnei Bonav and his two sons drowned. Umion Shnei Kalosav and his two daughters-in-law did Miun, which we're going to learn about Miun in the next parak. But the point is, in other words, that it's considered as if they were never married to his sons to begin with. Now, how does that? So, Omer of Nachmeitz, Brich Rachmona to Kas Vela Avdan Bahai Alm. So, Rav Nachmeitz, talking 150, 200 years later, says, Baruch Hashem, who embarrassed Avdon in this world, in other words, as bad as these things were, Saras and his children drowning and so forth, he would have been much worse off if he had had, if the punishment had been deferred until Olam Haba. So at least like this, it was Machaper on what he said, then when his Lashon Hara, and is speaking against Rabbi Shmuel Ben Rabbi Yossi, now he gets his place back in Olam Haba. Now, why did he get these punishments? Marsha explains like this. The last part of the story we said involved the Yavam. Where Rebbe showed, after all, that in fact Rabbi Shmuel Ben Rabbi Yossi is necessary, that without Rabbi Shmuel Ben Rabbi Yossi, he wouldn't have known what to do. He would have thought that we can only allow chalitza once the girl is a gedola. So now, and we said that Avdon was still disrespecting Rabbi Shmuel Ben Rabbi Yossi in connection with that. So now what happened is that Marsha says the two daughters-in-law who did Miun are the wives of the two sons who drowned. Meaning, in other words, what would have happened normally when the sons drown? So their wives would do Yibum, and then at least, what's the point of Yibum? That the Lahakim La'achim Shem Yisrael, at least they would have a continuation among the Jewish people because their wives would do Yibum. Here, when the wives instead did Miun, meaning that it makes that as if they were never married in the first place, so it means that Avdon's children, there's no Zecha for them afterwards. Second of all, Marsha says it may mean also, when we say they drown, it could even mean that they drowned in Mayim She'en Lahem Sof. We're going to talk about at the very end of our Masechta that if a person drowns in water, in water where you can't see all the sides of the water, then we can't say for sure the person is dead unless we actually find the body, because they may have found someplace else and gotten out of the water safely, and therefore we can't allow their wives to be married. So here, the wives at least did kneel and make it possible for them to be married in the future. If not for that, they would have stayed at Gunas. So anyway, so the Gemara finished. So we see. So all of that happened to Avdon as a result of the way that he talked disrespectfully against Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi. The Chofetz Chaim actually points out another point as well. What are we saying? We're saying that he told off Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi how he's stepping over Rosh and Kodesh. But now in the end, we see he himself is doing the same thing. So therefore, it comes out that when he talked against Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi, at least before we could say he was doing it l'shem Shabbayim. But now that we see that he himself was ready to do the same thing until Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi told him it's not really appropriate, and Rebbe tells him, fine, don't. So it shows, in other words, to begin with, when he argued against Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi, it was not completely l'shem Shabbayim. And he, after all, being at a high level, he was a Talmud of Rebbe, after all, he wasn't some person, then therefore he was judged very harshly in Shemayim for that. But we see how careful a person has to be, says the Chofetz Chaim, that a person tells off somebody for doing something, he has to be extra careful that he himself is not guilty of the same thing. So the Gemara finishes off. Two more lines. Based on what Berebi said, Berebi means the distinguished Talmud Chacham, meaning Rabbi Yossi, based on his words, Nilmud, we can learn Ktana Chalitza's Pu'utos, that a Ktana can do Chalitza once she reaches the age of Pu'utos, which is 6 or 7 years old, where then already she's old enough that she can, that if she sells Metalpulim, then it's valid. Actually, the Gemara discusses in Gittin, it depends. A really smart kid would be at 6. A kid who doesn't have as much smarts would be at 10. But sometimes between 6 and 10, when she's old enough to understand about Dinei Mamonos, then she's old enough about buying and selling, then she's old enough for Chalitza, says Rav Aharon. Rava Amad Shetigil, or Nedarim. Rava says, no, she has to be a little bit older. She has to be of the age when her Nedarim would have an effect, namely when she's 11. We're 1 year before Bas Mitzvah, for a boy, 1 year before Bar Mitzvah, if they know that a neder is addressed to Hashem, then their neder is valid. However, the Gemara says no. The Hilchasad Shetavi Shtei Sairus. The bottom line halacha is you can't do chalitza until she actually has Shtei Sairus, and that's how it is. In fact, Tosfos points out Rava himself brings in Nida the famous Chazaka de Rava, that usually when a boy reaches 13 or a girl 12, we usually assume that they have Shtei Sairus, but that works only for things that are banan, for things that are raisa. They need Shtei Sairus, and that's how it is over here. Chalitza being something that are raisa, we actually need to know that she has Shtei Sairus. So like we said, we have women check her out and then report their findings to the Rav.
So he should have gone out.
So in other words, it turns out that after all, Avram should have gone out and checked out the situation. And then maybe he would have had a heter to return. Yeah. Okay. Shukran, everyone.